So Israel hits them. So we have to go to full war now. And they try to claim, oh, we're just trying to get their missiles now. No, Trump says, oh, we killed 40-something, now we'll kill the rest. It's about regime change. So these are clear promises broken. This is clearly unconstitutional. Didn't get congressional authorization. This is full war. It's out of control. I appreciate Nick holding while I did a 10-minute intro. Nick Fuentes is our guest. And again, people say, this guy's pro-white, this guy's whatever. We have major universities saying no whites allowed. We have whites of the devil must be exterminated, New York Times. This is the natural response to that. So I don't want to hear a bunch of stuff. I always want to say that as a premise right up front. So, Nick, you told us what was coming 2 years ago. You've been proven right. You know, you're like the new Alex Jones being right on things. So I want you to give your take on what's currently happening and then what you predict is going to come next. And is there any way to get Trump to extricate himself from this bear trap?
Well, I'll take the last question first. I think the answer is no. You know, and I was very pessimistic about the prospect of that going into this administration. As you know, in 2024, I said that Trump is the Iran war candidate. It was inevitable that Trump would take us to war. And as a matter of fact, I think that's a large reason why he got elected in the first place. I think that if you look at the election in 2020, it was obviously stolen and rigged. And so you say, well, how did he then come back and win in 2024? Well, clearly the riggers had to stand down and let him take office. And whether that's a combination of the media, social media, electioneering, whatever you want to say, they let him win. And I think they let him win because they knew that unlike Joe Biden and unlike the Democrats, he was going to have no hesitation, no reluctance whatsoever to engage Iran and its proxies, which, of course, he then did throughout 2025 and 26. So as to whether he can extricate himself from the situation, I don't think so. I think that over and over, we see the same pattern where whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, Israel triggers a confrontation with Iran. And the United States does its best, I think, in both cases, in a Democrat or Republican administration, to mitigate the severity of the confrontation. So Joe Biden used deterrence. I believe that Donald Trump last year wanted that midnight hammer strike to be the end of the nuclear program and one tap and the war. But of course, Israel has orchestrated all of these different confrontations. They're deliberately provoking and triggering them. And I think that was the same story here. What has happened, as you said, as Marco Rubio said yesterday, is that Israel came to the United States. Netanyahu came to the White House for, I believe, the sixth time since Trump took office for the second time. And he told Trump, we're going in. And you can join us or you cannot join us, but we're going to attack and your soldiers are going to be collateral damage. And so they forced our hand. And what is happening now, once again, is actually very much more of the same, which is that in the same way that in previous years, Washington and Tel Aviv actually diverge on their Iran policy. For example, Washington seeks denuclearization. Our doctrine is non-proliferation of WMDs. Our imperative is we don't want Iran to have the bomb. Israel, on the other hand, has always wanted regime change. And these are two completely different things. Israel seeks the termination, not just of the Ayatollah, but of the entire Islamic Revolutionary Government. And so that tension has characterized the three-way diplomacy between the U.S., Israel, and Iran. This war is more of the same. I believe that Trump went in knowing that Israel was going in. And I believe the play, to the extent that there is any kind of a plan, is Trump wants the Venezuela model. I'm sure that he, and I think Vance and the others as well, they thought they would go in hard and quickly against Iran, destroy the Navy, destroy the missile production, destroy the missile launch platforms, kill some of the top brass. And the expectation is that somebody from within the Iranian Revolutionary Guard would rise up as a pragmatist and negotiate with the United States for peace. And they would maintain Iran's government structure and security architecture while being pliant or compliant with the United States.
And by the way, you're not just speculating. They admit this, an insane gamble, just a crazy shot in the dark gamble.
Yes, and that is the correct word. It's a gamble. That is totally a roll of the dice whether that will happen. We just don't know that. We don't know who that might be, if that will happen. Now, further, this is why this is the ongoing divergence in Washington-Tel Aviv policy. That's not going to be enough for Israel. Even if that was possible, let's say in your revolutionary, zealot, Shiite, theocratic government, you get a faction from the IRGC that wants to negotiate with Washington after they killed the Ayatollah and half the leadership and blew up the country. Even if that happens, will this satisfy Israel? The answer is no. Because what Israel is seeking is a total regime change. They want to install a liberal democratic government, maybe led by the Shah, or at least a transition led by the Shah. And why? So that they can manipulate the future state of Iran, as they did in Syria, as they did in Iraq, as they did in these other countries.
And that was my point from Saturday on, is you can look at this one-dimensionally. Yeah, Muslims are bad, but the British, the U.S. and Israel always put worse people in, Hezbollah, al-Qaeda in charge of Syria. The idea that the West is this fairy godmother creating My Little Pony heavens is bullshit.
Well, that's totally true. And not only that, but I think it's likely at this point that a hardliner regime takes power, because who's going to be left after these people watch their leaders get killed and their colleagues and their own countrymen get killed? I don't think they become more compliant. And it's a country of 90 million people. They have 1 million soldiers between all the security services. I don't know that they're just going to lay down and beg for mercy at this point. Why would they?
Americans, even a pussified Americans wouldn't do that. The Vietnamese they're not going to lay down. They're going to get more aggressive.
They will. And that plays into Israel's hands, because then what this does is it basically reignites the pretext for war. So, you know, the language in the Trump admin is escalation. We're going to bomb them even harder. We're not ruling out boots on the ground. It can always get worse. And so maybe you get a ceasefire, a new regime comes to power, they don't surrender, and then we have to come up with a more permanent solution. And this is where now the U.S. is talking to the Kurds and talking about the Kurds maybe potentially being a ground force.
Now they're talking about breaking Iran up, which is the Israeli plan to break up every country there.
Right, as they did in Iraq, as they did in Syria. That's the textbook Israeli grand strategy. So, yes, and that's the thing. You never see the end of the Iran war. It's always, this is just the latest climax. This is just the latest ceiling of hostilities between the U.S., Iran, and Israel, which have been ongoing for decades. And I don't think this is the end of it. So I don't know.
Do you think Trump even, I'm not trying to give him a get out of jail free card, but I actually know what your answer is. I know you're smart. Do you think Trump even understands this? And the answer is no.
No, I don't think so. And I think he just overestimates his abilities. I'm sure that in part, maybe they did Venezuela to build up his confidence, because Venezuela is a totally different story. 28 million people. The regime's not loyal.
They did the limited bombing thing and let him negotiate and have Israel stand down. They did that thing last year, I said, to get his confidence up with Iran.
You did say that. I remember I was down there and you said exactly that. And I think that is quite literally the play, which is you get that momentum, you get that inertia. And I'm sure they told him that this would create a deterrent effect. You do it to Venezuela, you can bring the force to Iran and say,
and
hey,
they got top psychologists. The really good ones are studying Trump. I mean, they're pitching him bullshit, seeing what works, going back. I mean, it's disgusting.
It is. And they manipulate him. You know, people say it's blackmail. People say they got a tape of him. I don't think it's that complicated. I think that they surround him. They saturate his information diet and, you know, and they form his opinions. They create the options. And the question is, where's the personnel? Where's Tulsi Gabbard? Isn't she the DNI? Where is she? Where's Vance? Where's Rubio? These are all supposed to be America first people that we were supposed to be excited about in the cabinet. And what we find from the Times is that not even a single one of them told Trump not to do it. And these were all ostensibly supposed to be against the endless wars, the Middle Eastern conflicts.
By the way, I didn't think you were wrong 2 years ago when you predicted this, or last year when you said it. I hoped we could avert this. But clearly now, if you follow Trump's psychology, I think he just doubles down. So where does that go?
So I think that it will end in regime change one way or another. You know, what happens imminently is sort of unpredictable. It's hard to imagine how exactly the Iranians respond and what the Trump administration has up its sleeves in terms of escalation. But I think that Israel, clearly they're driving the policy. They've orchestrated all of these events. they're not letting go until there's a regime change. And what Israel wants, they get. So I think that before the 4 years are up, you're going to see a full-scale regime change. And for that to happen, there's going to need to be a ground presence. Maybe that's partial U.S., partially it's militia or it's Kurds. I believe that is what was driving the protests even a month ago. It was all in the western half of the country, in the Kurdish part. And they said that these were people clad in black and they had automatic weapons and they appeared to be trained. So I imagine it's going to be some kind of smart power, multi-domain operation with the militias armed, maybe from Iraqi Kurdistan, which shares the border, and maybe from Turkey. And I think there's going to be some kind of force that comes in and forces a transition. I think that's when you work out the math on that, I think that's all but inevitable. And it seems unlikely now, but it seemed unlikely that we'd be here. It seemed unlikely we'd be bombing Iran into submission or that we'd bomb their nuclear program a year ago. It just keeps escalating in that direction.
But you predicted it because I watch your show. I watch clips almost every day, but whenever I can, I watch when I work out hours of it, you know, every few days. You literally, it was uncanny. I remember laid all this out 2 years ago. How'd you know that? You just knew their policy?
They said it.
Yeah.
They said it openly. I appreciate you saying that. And it is true. I did predict it almost to the letter, but they were basically saying this in October 2023, right after the October 7th attacks. The Israelis all came out and they said, this is going to be a regional war. We're going to destroy all the proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, and then we're going to cut the head off the snake. They said, we're going to reset the international relations in the region that has prevailed for 50 years. And I think what they meant by that is this Islamic crescent headed by Iran, which was only the latest one after the Baathists, after the Arab coalition between Syria and Egypt. So I think that if you're really paying attention, even to the rhetoric from Trump, everybody forgets that the Israelis were whispering in Trump's ear that Iran was trying to assassinate him. Why do you think they did that? It's because they were already laying the groundwork. That was their pre-programming to sabotage that relationship so that they could tell him when he becomes president, hey, remember, they did try to kill you. And that was always meant to spoil diplomacy between the two countries.
Sure, let me ask you this question then. Why do the Israelis for 5 years wear on a lot of their uniforms the Greater Israel map? Why do they admit it in their newspapers, then attack us and censor us when we say it, and then have dozens of articles a day, I can't keep track of them, saying, we run America, we're the new superpower, we're going to take out Turkey, we're going to take out our allies through Obama. You know, they took out and put the Muslim Brotherhood in. You know, they created Hamas. I mean, we're sitting here watching. It's not just Netanyahu. It's the other main party and their, you know, last prime minister saying, we're going to get Turkey and others next. I mean, And then they think we're going to go to war now with Turkey, the biggest conventional military in Europe. I mean, it's like there's this giant buffet, and Israel's like a 1,000-pound fat person that wants us to sit there and hand feed all this at our expense. I mean, this is just megalomania. So I know Israel's smart in an evil way, but why do they brag? And I guess to enrage everybody else that's awake, because that just adds to the furor. What's going on here?
I think that that is a deliberate provocation. I think that, you know, part of their entire MO is they actually need the conflict. They feed on the conflict. You know, all of this was the result from October 7th. And after all, what was October 7th? Well, they called it the Al-Aqsa flood operation. What is Al-Aqsa? That is the mosque. That's the Temple Mount. That's the Dome on the Rock, which is in Jerusalem, which is the center really of the occupied territory dispute. That the Palestinians claim East Jerusalem as the capital, and they claim that's their third holiest mosque in Islam. And what the Jews did that in Israel that precipitated the October 7th attack is they had all of these Jews go to the Dome on the Rock, go to the mosque in Jerusalem, to the Al-Aqsa compound, and they started doing their religious rites in a very provocative way. And actually, that was the precipitating cause.
And killing the red heifer.
Yes, finding the red heifer, the unblemished heifer and everything. And it was deliberately intended to provoke the Muslims into a response. And I think that the stuff about Greater Israel, the goal is the same. It is to provoke these countries into conflict, because ultimately that is the way they're going to achieve their goals, is to elicit hostility And then that's the pretext to bring in the United States to fight their wars for them. And I think that's the playbook from day one. So that is all part of it. Telegraphing that, signaling that, that's all part of the sick agenda, sadly.
No, I agree. So let's unpack this and how do we stop it? How do we stop it? We'll be right back with Nick Fuentes. Stay with us here on Live Feeds Now. You know, people ask, who do I have on as guests on a routine basis? Whether they're economists, whether they're strategy people, security people, journalist, it's who is the most accurate. It's a really easy rule. I want to be accurate. I want to be smart. I want to be informed. The more knowledge I get, the more I want factoids. The more I want to, it all interconnects. And then I really disdain on the left, right, anything, people that just pick up talking points and act like they know something. And what's frustrating is 90% of these so-called journalists and influencers, literally, you talk to them in person, they don't know anything. They said they're like deer in the headlights. My callers are infinitely more knowledgeable because, you know, they're tuned in here. They probably were smart before they tuned in. That's why they look for something else smart. Bird of a feather fly together, flock together. But it's not about tuning our horns. It's about saying we need to save civilization and humanity. Nick Fuentes, you can disagree with his conclusions or what he thinks should be done sometimes, but you can't disagree with his analysis. And the fact that he goes up against top geopolitical, you know, White House advisors with 5 degrees and kicks their ass. So respect needs to be due. But also, it's not just the globals we're fighting. It's the low IQ people that we've woken up who are more like in high school and they want to, in a hierarchy, say, you know, everybody's a globalist, but them. It's something that the Israelis and the other lobbies feed with bots to make us fight with each other. So we don't recognize the organic leaders that God has given us to lead us out of this. So I want to just say that right up front, that I respect Nick Fuentes because he knows what he's talking about. I can disagree on the final product of thousands of points that go together or say maybe this is better. And sometimes he's right more than I am. The difference is he knows what he's talking about. And I am sick and tired of having to debate low-grade morons that don't even know how to find their ass with both hands. So, Nick, let me throw this out at you because we got a lot of time here, and I appreciate it. But I want you to quantify before we go to these clips and unpack this and what you think is coming next, what you predict next, how we can stop this, which you already said we can't, which we still got to try. I think you're right. I'm about to evacuate to South America or something. That's where all the globalists are going. But here's my question. Looking at all of this, is there, and I want you to think about this. I know you already said no. What could we do? A peaceful demonstration, I don't know, hang something on our doorway, or we all, liberals would say mass strike. I don't want to join them in that because then you're allied with Islam. Is there any way to get Trump off this destructive course we're on? And then maybe describe to people, because you predicted the future, where this course takes us. Nick Fuentes.
Well, as I said, I'm very pessimistic about that. And the reason being is because when you look at the numbers, it's not popular. You know, they did all the polls this weekend. You got Washington Post, Reuters. I think there's a few others. And the approval rating for the conflict is sitting at about 30%, right around 30%, maybe just under that. And Trump has to know this is an utter betrayal of his campaign promise of no new wars, and he's the peace president and so on. So as far as a massive demonstration, what is that supposed to demonstrate? That the war is unpopular? They know the war is unpopular. Is that supposed to demonstrate that we're dissatisfied? They know we're dissatisfied. And I think that that gets back to the nature of it, which is that it is a gamble. And I think that Trump is counting on the fact, well, let's actually be honest for a moment here about it. Trump is counting on the fact or the possibility that this works, that this little gambit pays off. And we bomb Iran a lot for a week. It's quick and it's hard. And then we leave and we get what we want. And there's minimal loss of life. If it is successful, I think people on our side may even be underestimating the appetite for something like that among the general public. If it's a big victory, or if they're able to plausibly claim victory, it may even be popular. And so I think Trump is actually okay with this. I think that Trump, the way he sees it, because he said this the other day, he said, I don't care about approval ratings. He said, and I'll put boots on the ground. I don't care. Now, obviously he cares on some level. But I think in his mind, this is always.
Yeah, he better care about a bunch of dead troops. I mean, you talk about, we're talking, it'll make Vietnam numbers look tame.
Well, it depends on what they do. If it's a full-scale invasion, you're absolutely right, because they will try to inflict maximum casualties, and it will get ugly. It will be like Iraq.
There's already special forces there before this happened. I'm talking about a real invasion to, quote, secure the Strait of Hormuz or whatever, is how they'll start it. It's just, it's a disaster.
Right, yeah, and I agree, and I think that, you know, on some level, he obviously cares about these things, but this is part of the bluff. This is part of the gambit, which is, you know, partially, I think some of the things he's saying is meant to signal to the Iranians that things could get worse. If the goal, if the outcome that you desire is for a pragmatic faction to take power, negotiate with the United States, well, to persuade them that that is the logical course, you would actually need to convince them that things could get worse.
And that's why they just had the council meeting to elect a new mullah who didn't want peace right now. They just killed them today. So he's hoping like maybe the next group's less radical. But as you said on your show a few days ago, and it's true, as you go down the chain, they get more radical and stupider.
Yes, and that is why he's trying to persuade them that it could always get worse. I'm sure in their mind, in Trump's mind, he's thinking that these Iranians expect that maybe they could ride out the storm if they could survive, if they could hide out in shelters, then maybe there's going to be some continuity of government. And Trump is trying to persuade them that if they don't capitulate, it could get worse. The bottom could continue to fall out from under them.
And by the way, they really don't want you. Influence farmers will say you just endorsed Trump. No, when you war game what he's thinking, you're not endorsing that.
Right. No, we're purely speculating about his state of mind and what his approach is. And so
you see the clips of you where they take you war gaming and say that's your the same thing to me. That's what they do. I just want to get that out there.
They always. Yeah, well, and I consider those people to be third worldists because they're really arguing for Iran in and of itself. Or Venezuela in and of itself, or China. And me, I look at Iran not as a great country. I mean, they're a Muslim theocracy, but I look at them as a country that, one, they're a sovereign state, so I don't think we have business going in and killing their leader.
And their potential to destroy us and bring down the economy. So.
Right. And I would go further than that. They balance Israel. There's a balance between Iran and Israel. I don't know that that's the worst thing in the world, because if you have two very powerful states.
Israel needs to be contained. Now, why are they now publicly admitting everywhere? I'm sure you've seen it that, yeah, we're taking everything, including their allies. Like it is. It'd be like if my neighbor said, yeah, I just went over and screwed my neighbor's wife and your wife's next.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's a provocation. It's intended to be provocative. They actually do not want peace in the region. And all of this is based on fueling this ongoing conflict. They don't want it.
Stood down on October 7th. Same reason they founded Hamas.
Yes, and Americans are under the impression that we're desperate to make a deal, and there's this peace that is just always elusive, always out of reach. If only the Muslims would just relax. But it takes two to tango here. The Israelis, they are the ones that actually want the conflict. They didn't want a deal with Iran. If they get a deal with Iran, that they don't get to topple the Iranian regime. If Iran gets a deal with the United States, maybe they give up their nukes on some timeline, but they also get to normalize their trade relations and diplomatic relations with all the countries
exactly.
in the region.
Israel wants to keep it to no man's land and keep them in the timeout box.
Yes, they want to maintain that kind of operational control like they had in Syria, where they can control the airspace and they can just drop bombs, and then they could ultimately control the outcome in that country and make it significantly weaker. So that's the sick logic of Israel's grand strategy.
We have a full sales job now by Netanyahu, Trump, and now Vance. We have the clips that it may last a little while, a long time. It may last forever. We're being sold on a forever war right now. And so here's my problem. I don't want the Democrats opening the border. I like Trump killing the carbon tax. I like the no tax on tips. You know, there's all this good stuff, but rapidly, like I can like ignore some stuff and hold my nose with Trump, but quickly, I mean, by the hour, I morally cannot be part of this. You're already there saying vote Democrat. I get you're saying that as a carrot and a stick, but I mean, what the hell's going on here?
I think you have to. I think you have to vote Democrat in 26, and I'll tell you why. I mean, we're being told always that the Republicans are the lesser of two evils, that they're going to be marginally better than the Democrats. Look at all of the broken promises. Epstein files, that's huge. It's huge. And let's be honest, they tried to cover it up. It's not like they fumbled that. It's not like they made a mistake. They engaged in an active cover-up, and they failed only because of a revolt within their own party. And now Marjorie Greene is an outcast. She was like the MAGA congresswoman. She was like the one in Congress who came after Trump won the election. She's an outcast because she led the coup to get the Epstein files released. That's a big one. Then you got the deportations. They haven't started on the border wall. And even though they secured the border, you know, look, they secured the border in 2020. What good did that do when Joe Biden came into power? Nothing, because then he just overturned all the executive orders and they came pouring in. That's why you need the wall. They haven't started it. 230,000 deportations. It isn't happening. And now we're in a regime change war with Iran. And you know, you've been around. I've been around, not as long as you, but for some time. Regime change in Iran is like synonymous with the neocons' ultimate master plan. That is like the number one thing on Israel's wish list.
It's the jewel in the crown. It was their, the whole Middle East strategy and the rebuilding America's defenses PNAC plan 2020 or 2000 was this.
Yes. And even further than that, going back to clean break in 96, this has always been the plan. And for a time, we thought that was unthinkable. We thought that Trump winning made that impossible. So for Trump to be the one to take us there and sell it and push it and trigger it, and now we're in a regime change war with Iran, it's almost unbelievable to even say that. Thousands of American and Israeli airstrikes destroying Iran's military. Here's how I feel about it. If you will tolerate that, you will tolerate anything. At what point do you say no? What point do you say there's no excuses? People say, well, if there's boots on the ground, dude, they're dropping bombs everywhere. And it's in Iran. So for me, I said, that's the last straw. I'm out. And you know me, I'm the furthest thing from a Democrat. I'm far right. I'm not left wing or even liberal. I don't consider myself even a center liberal or
let's
right liberal.
Let's talk about that. Democrats get in. Isn't that accelerationist?
No, I think that I don't know that I would characterize it as accelerationist. I would characterize it as corrective. And it's sending a message to the GOP before the big one, which is 28.
Yeah, you're saying the only leverage we've got is the wake up call.
Right. And, you know, 28, we got to win that one. I really believe a Republican's got to win, but we need it to be the right Republican. And I don't know that there's any other language they will understand other than to show them we're not showing up in 26. And what's more, I also think that Vance and Rubio are to blame in this as well. If they couldn't stop a war in Iran when they're in power now, how are they going to make the decision when they become the president?
We knew Rubio's a deep state guy. He's been, quote, doing a good job for what we wanted till now. But Vance was an open thing. He's come out now and said we may be there in a long war. So Vance is definitely getting in line with that. In fact, speaking of the devil, let's go to those clips first. Here's Thune, the leader of the Senate, saying Trump doesn't need a war powers. He has authorization, which no, he doesn't. This is pure war, folks. This is not blow up their weapons. This is regime change. And then Vance saying the same thing and then saying basically this could be a forever war. And then I want to go through these other clips, but here it is.
Do you think the Congress would need to authorize any military action against Iran beyond the 60-day or 90-day window?
No. I think the president has the authority that he needs to conduct the activities, the operations that are currently underway there. As you know, there's a lot of controversy around, questions around the War Powers Act, but I think the president is acting in the best interest of the nation and our national security interests by ensuring that he's protecting Americans and American bases and installations in that region, as well as those of our allies.
We'll go back and get Nick Fuentes' take on this, but Marco Rubio yesterday, Israel launched the attack. They were going to attack us. We had to attack them because they would attack us if we attacked them. Thune just said, we attacked them, so they're going to attack us. So now we have to authorize the war. So we attack somebody. So the president has a War Powers Act because he has the power to attack somebody. I mean, this is insane. Continue.
The United States has a lot of optionality here. And, you know, we could go for a little bit longer. We could go for a lot longer. But I think the president just wants to make it clear to the Iranians and to the world that he is not going to rest until he accomplishes that all important objective of ensuring that Iran can't have a nuclear weapon, not just for the next few years, not just because we obliterated Fordo or some other enrichment facility, but because the Iranians themselves commit long term to not building a nuclear weapon.
So we've gone from, oh, we successfully destroyed their nuclear stuff, which I said was BS, to now total war. Nick Fuentes.
Yeah, they said last year that the program was completely obliterated. And, you know, we've almost even talked past the point. It's sort of interesting. Last year, the pretext for bombing Iran in the first place was that they were racing towards a nuclear bomb. When Israel hit Iran on June 13, 25, they said, well, Iran was going to strike us and they were racing towards a device. That's why we had to preempt that by striking them. And then, of course, the U.S. intervened to finish the job at Fordo and Natanz, which only we could do with the bunker busters from the B-2 bombers. Well, then in January, when these protests started in Iran, all of a sudden that shifted and Trump came out and said, well, we were going to attack Iran, but we couldn't topple the regime in one blow. And you say, well, wait a second. I thought Israel and the United States attacked Iran last year because they were on their way to a nuke. But then we took care of it and we blew up their program. Now they're saying, well, we couldn't bomb Iran at our discretion in January because it wasn't going to topple the regime. And you say, topple the regime? I thought it was about the nuclear program. And like you say, now we're in it. Now we're in a full-fledged regime change war. And you wonder, who made this decision exactly? Who voted for this? Why is this happening? Arguably, it is within, I think, America's interest to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. And if they're about to imminently acquire them, a case could be made. I don't know that I would make it, but in a theoretical, a case could be made that the United States might preempt that by intervening in Iran.
In that cover story, and Trump says, oh, we killed 47, now we'll kill the rest. It's all about regime change now, which under the law is illegal to preemptively attack somebody saying, I want regime change. So Trump's being set up here with major impeachment charges.
Well, and they're throwing everything out there. It's the dead protesters. It's the nuclear program. It's the missiles. It's just like Iraq. It's exactly like Iraq. Oh, they're building a nuke, but also they did the anthrax plot. Also 9/11. They just throw everything out there in the hopes that enough people are going to buy it. And like you said, there's nothing legal about this. What is the authorization for the use of force against Iran? Did Congress declare war? At what point was this decision made and exactly by whom? So I don't know that this is impeachable because ironically, the Democrats supported too. Chuck Schumer came out of the closed door hearing with Marco Rubio at the State of the Union or the afternoon of and said, well, this is very serious and Trump's just going to have to make his case. There's a lot of Democrats that support this, guys like John Fetterman, among others.
They're stepping back to not take any problems if it goes sideways, but they're behind it.
100%, 100%. I think so. And I don't think they would move against him for that. So
Trump saying that, no, he forced Israel's hand, even though on record, the Pentagon admitted, no, we didn't know. They took the opportunity, so we had to hit. The Secretary of State says it. Trump makes him come out and say that wasn't true. Talk about congressional hearings now. What's going to happen to Rubio when he's in front of Congress? So this is very embarrassing right now. Here is Trump saying that they made him force, that Trump forced Israel's hand to strike first during the middle of the day against our doctrine. And then why do you think Rubio came out yesterday and said Israel forced our hand? What do you think the impetus behind that was? Here it is.
President, did Israel force your hand to launch these strikes against Iran? Did that help pull the United States into this war?
No, I might have forced their hand. You see, we were having negotiations with these lunatics. And it was my opinion that they were going to attack first. They were going to attack. If we didn't do it, they were going to attack first. I felt strongly about that. And we have great negotiators, great people, people that do this very successfully and have done it all their lives very successful. And based on the way the negotiation was going, I think they were going to attack first. And I didn't want that to happen. So if anything, I might have forced Israel's hand. But Israel was ready and we were ready and we've had a very, very powerful impact.
Well, since the 80s, Iran has not launched an attack first. Every attack has been a response, a retaliatory attack. I mean, that is literally pulled out of Trump's butt, Nick.
It is. And that's exactly what happened last year, too. Israel came in and Trump said, oh, we knew they were doing it. They told us and the whole negotiations were a ruse. It's almost just childish to see Trump in the White House spin. Well, actually, I forced Israel to do it. This is when Trump just becomes grating. You know, all those things we thought were charming 10 years ago or endearing or funny. Now it's just grating and insufferable. He's obviously full of it. That there's nothing true about that at all. This idea that, like you say, that Iran was about to attack us. Really? We have two carriers there. We got a dozen warships, 50,000 soldiers, half of our Air Force, and Iran was going to start the war against us. Does that even make any sense? That is completely made up.
And then Rubio and the idea, says Israel launched an attack, so we had to, because they were going to attack us. Now Trump goes, no, they were going to attack us with no information. I mean, I'm sorry, folks. I wanted to support Trump. I support the killing the carbon. That's why I hate this, because he's done a lot of good. We're watching Trump self-immolate on live television.
It is. It's a complete unraveling, and it's clear what happened there. I think, look, J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio, they want to run for president in 28, so they know that their butt is on the line here. If this Iran war doesn't go well, there go their presidential ambitions. And so I think that when Rubio comes out and says, well, Israel made us do it, obviously, this is like a real-time narrative construction so that when in 28 he's questioned about it on the debate stage, if this becomes a debacle, this is hedging, he can say, well, we didn't have any options. We had the choice. Either we go in with Israel at the beginning or Americans die. Well, I chose to, you know, that's going to be the argument. That's going to be the campaign speech. That'll be the, you know, screenshot this. In a few years, that is what he's going to say on the debate stage. We had a choice. If we didn't act, then more Americans would have died. And I stood with Trump. We made the bold decision to go in and blah, blah. That is clearly going to be the answer.
And by the way, you're on a roll. You're on a roll. We got another hour coming up, but let me just stop you. I said at the first of the show, they're going to use the insurance company shutting down the Strait of Hormuz as the claim that we've got to put a beachhead on the Iranian side so they can't close it to secure it for trade. I said, I believe that'll be the excuse for boots on the ground, which they floated in the last 2 days, which Eric Prince freaked out about, rightfully. Ladies and gentlemen, he just put this out. Show the timestamp on this, guys. Scroll down. Pull it up. I just saw this now. Trump is now saying he signed an executive emergency order basically for war. If anybody tries to close the strait, it's already closed. So this is him using economic emergency powers to have an unofficial declaration of war. Nick, this is horrible. This is really bad. This is boots on the ground. So this is just a few minutes ago. What do you make of this, Nick Voidez?
Well, it's like I said, we're being drawn in here. That is really the operative word. Nobody wants this. It's not in our interest. We are being slowly drawn in. And what that implies is that step by step, we're being dragged further into this. And that's always what happens. It always starts with, we're just putting maximum pressure sanctions. Well, we just killed Qasem Soleimani. Well, we just backed a cyber attack. It's always, we just did this one time. And all it does is increase our liability. It just increases our stake in this disaster. And so it was very obvious. Okay, we go in with the bombs really hard. We destroy the Navy. We destroy the missile launch platforms. Okay, well, then you get this logic like, well, you break it, you bought it. Now Iran inevitably is going to keep throwing missiles at us. We're running out of interceptors. So what do you do now? Iran is going to close the Strait of Hormuz. That's going to shut down 20% of the oil trade. What do you do now? Again, you're being drawn in step by step, and our share of this, our stake in this, is always increasing until you wake up and you find you're in this unthinkable scenario. So that's why I say, yeah. I don't know that we can rule out boots on the ground in the future.
Oh, but that's the plan. People go, oh, the executive order just says they'll protect the ships. Yeah, they're going to do it with troops. I already saw it. People, we got a whole other hour coming up, but how people find you, Nick?
I am at rumble.com/Nick J. Fuentes. I'm live every weeknight, and I'm on Twitter, Nick J. Fuentes as well.
And I'm at Real Alex Jones on X and the Alex Jones Show on Rumble. Everybody, we've survived so much. Nobody thinks we're going to shut down. The state receiver is refusing to pay the internet bills, refusing to keep the company open. So it looks like we're shutting down this month, towards the end of the month. We have the backup network. Just be ready, people, because you survive so much, you don't take it serious. Just get ready to share. Here's where Alex is at. Because I don't cry wolf. I just survive a long time. We'll be right back with hour number four. Now, a lot of men particularly, because men's brains are designed, the cerebral cortex, in the areas of the brain, there's like triple the connections that a woman has to strategy. And that's why men love chess. Men love football. It's all strategy. But you fill your head with that. Those are literal Roman bread and circuses the Romans wrote about to distract their men not to be politically involved. My cerebral cortex is focused on politics. So I have a lot of facts, a lot of overlaying information in history. This is a short segment. Long segment coming up with Nick Fuentes. But it's so frustrating to actually know how this works and see what's moving on the chessboard. And it's not in America's interest or anybody's interest, but tyrants. To understand the historical danger of all of this. And I don't really have words, Nick, to talk about when you look out second order, third order, fourth order consequences of this. Why privately the chairman of the Joint Chiefs told Trump don't do it. Eric Prince, many others. And, you know, we have Trump and J.D. Vance and compilation saying we're not going to go to boots on the ground. We're not going to go to regime change. They're doing it. Can you speak to what you predict happens down this road we're going? And just there's got to be other ways of leverage. If we can't leverage Trump, who do we put pressure on in Congress to stop this? Or is AIPAC too powerful?
I think what has been set in motion cannot be stopped at this point. I think that the time to do it would have been in 24. And everybody reassured us that if Trump won, well, we would pressure Trump later. I remember Mike Cernovich said that. He said, well, this is how politics works. You know, you don't know how politics works. I do. He said, you got to get Trump elected. And then we're going to work in the admin and we're going to fight the personnel and blah, blah. And this is, I know we've had this conversation. This is always my refrain. It's like, we tried that. We did that. We did that in the first term. And by the way, how did the first term end? Trump ripped up the 2018 nuclear deal. In 2019, we're effectively in a war with Iran. In 2020, he kills Qasem Soleimani. We're shooting down drones. They're attacking tankers. You can Google it. There's an article, I believe it was in December 2020. Trump actually ordered the military to attack Iran, or at least was considering it in the lame duck session. And it was only his generals that discouraged him from doing it. So it's like, this is deja vu all over again. We live this and we tried all that. The personnel, the voting, the Twitter campaign, the hashtags. And I think that, you know, now Trump is going to do what Trump is going to do. And Trump, who knows why? Blackmail, persuasion, whatever. Those people are around him.
He's ego. You said it an hour. It's ego.
It's ego, certainly. Whatever it is, that's what we're stuck with. And I think that if you want to really get it to stop, you just got to switch up and play both sides. You got to play both sides and go Democrat. And I don't want to do it. You know, I don't like the Democrats. I fully understand what they represent. But you know, what else can you do to the Republicans? All that other stuff is flaccid. Protest, tweet about it. They know if you are going to vote in November that you're really not serious. You know, you're going to go and rah, 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 hold up the sign. But as long as they get your vote in the end, I mean, honestly, what difference does it make for them? There's a little less enthusiasm. They don't care. So I'm really, like I said, I think that we actually have to think beyond this. And we have to think the only way out of it is 28. How do we relight the flame in 28? That's all I care about. And for that to happen, maybe there needs to be a little pain. You know, the current GOP has to suffer a little bit for it to be reborn in 28. But it's not going to be Vance and Rubio that save the day, obviously, based on this.
Well, I would say this. I may agree with you if we say we're not going to accept, we're not going to support. I would almost call it a candidate by candidate basis. And then if somebody's a neocon, or we should do a litmus test. If they support this, they shouldn't be voted for. I almost see it as like a loyalty pledge. But let's come back because the French are sending their aircraft carrier to protect one of the main corridors there, Suez Canal. And Trump is now basically saying they're going to send in U.S. ships in the Strait of Hormuz, which is a total trap. We'll be right back in 60 seconds. I don't want people to miss the historic point we're at right now. The fourth turning, the end of the old order, the populist revolutions happening everywhere, and then Trump betraying what he said he would do. I have compilations of him saying no boots on the ground, no full war. And here we are, and it's all unraveling in real time. The Strait of Hormuz has already been closed by insurance companies after Iran began to attack ships and blew up and sunk a few in the last 3 days. And now Trump signs an executive order saying, we'll do whatever we have to for open shipping. We'll put troops on the ground on the Strait of Hormuz on their side. We're going to have military escorts through there. The announcements are being made off as his plan. I mean, this is escalating to the next level immediately. And this is why Eric Prince and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and others told Trump, Iran's not going to give up. You're not going to get regime change. You have 99% chance right away. You're not going to get in 4 weeks or 6 weeks or a year. Now they're prepping us for just an endless war. So now we're against Europe with its plan to prop itself up with endless war with Russia. And now America has its plan for this. We didn't vote for this. We didn't sign up for this. And again, oh, they might have attacked us when Israel attacked them, said Rubio yesterday. So we had to attack them. And when they hit our ships, which Iran knew that they hit a few ships, they close it with insurance. Then they send in the U.S. ships. Then the Iranians attack those ships. And they'll go, oh, my God, they attacked us. All we're doing is blowing them up. And then now Trump says we got to put troops on the other side of the Strait of Hormuz to protect us. I said it the first hour. It's happening in live time. Nick, this is like a bad dream.
It is. It feels surreal. I still can't even believe it. Even though I've been predicting it and even though we're watching it, I wake up and I see the news. We are at war with Iran. And for people that are not paying attention to all this stuff, again, it cannot be overstated. This is like, it's literally the neocon nightmare scenario, like war with Iraq, Syria, now Iran.
You this just is go the like, ghost of the neocons possessing us. This is their wet dream.
Yes. And for Trump to be the one delivering it, that's the most surreal aspect of all of it. You could see a DeSantis doing this. You could see a Kamala Harris doing this, honestly. But to see Donald Trump on Friday night at Mar-a-Lago with the hat on, with the black curtain talent, announcing this war, building the case against the Iranian regime, you go, what happened? What happened to this movement? You know, I mean, you and I, we've been with Trump really since the beginning, since 2015. And when he came down the escalator, his first big move was basically to destroy this Republican support for war and the war in Iraq in particular, repudiate that whole legacy of the Bush dynasty, George Bush, Jeb Bush. And so for him now to be doing this, it really feels like it's come full circle.
And we have Lindsey Graham having orgasms on television.
That too. Yeah, Lindsey Graham's a huge fan of this. Well, endorsed by Trump. So, I mean, again, this is my frustration. The signs were all there. J.D. Vance said at the Republican convention in 2024, we need to bomb Iran really hard. And Trump endorsed Lindsey Graham. This time he endorsed him 6 years ago. And Trump got up, you remember, during the election, and he said, if Iran takes me out, then we're going to wipe Iran off the map. Like, all of this was telegraphed from the beginning. And really, you know who I blame, sadly? I blame the so-called plan trusters. I know that you were more bullish on Trump, but you acknowledged these were legitimate concerns. There were a lot of people that said, no.
Oh, stop. Because you've been righter than me on this, and I'm not always right. I'm right about 90% of the time. I've been very honest. So I'm gonna now mea culpa here, because when I'm wrong, I'm going to say it publicly. I needed Trump to be real, and so much good stuff. The carbon tax, getting out of it, I can go for an hour. And it's still better than that, but you can't have lesser two evils. I have the Democrats trying to put me in prison. I just got subpoenaed again to defend when I got Arctic Frost. I got to go to Congress and provide my documents because we're going after, Jack Smith. So the Democrats are trying to put me in prison. They run show trials on HBO. So obviously it's not that I'm being paid off by Trump. I've been persecuted for supporting him. So I want to now pay out on this. I want to save the country, secure the border, find the missing kids. I want to believe, but I'm not in a cult. I'm not delusional. So I was like, I'm critical. This is overall good. But and now I'm just like, now I'm having to think of the off ramp. Nick, we've talked about this privately. You know, you're targeted too. They're trying to kill you, your house. This is we're your name's Nick J. Fuentes. I'm Alex E. Jones. We're real people. We're under attack. So we're in the real world. You do what you think's right. I do what I think's right. You're not paid by people. We're just our fans. So to me, I needed Trump as my lifeboat. May not be perfect, but it's the lifeboat I've got. And I'm watching it sink by its own doing. And so this is horrifying. And so, but I can't sign on to covering up Epstein. I can't sign on to World War III. And so that's why I tried to promote the optimism, because I fucking need this, man. Like, I want to fix the country. I want to turn it around. So it's not that I was delusional. I still hope we can turn it around, but I just... Sorry, go ahead. You get what I'm saying?
I get it. And I listen, like I said, I don't think that everybody that supported Trump was being dismissive about these concerns. I get it. You know, we all wanted to believe. I was 18 years old when Trump ran in 2016. And I remember getting in fights with people. This is my whole life, too. At 18 years old, I wore the MAGA hat at Boston University, one of the most liberal campuses in the country, and became a pariah on my college campus.
It's sad to see something you sacrificed. It's sad to see something you fought and bled for die.
Yeah. And, you know, that's my whole adult life. I know that's a huge part of your life also. And now we're witnessing it's totally unraveling. It's an utter and complete betrayal. It's heartbreaking in many ways.
And when I try to salvage it with people, I get attacked as a liberal, which is when these people doing that can't even find Iran on a fucking map.
Yeah. Well, what's called for is for us to be sober-minded about the entire thing, you know, because there's a lot of Trump haters.
I've been a realist the whole time, but was hoping, and now I'm just not even hoping. I'm just going to be a realist.
Yeah, I mean, and really, it's okay to have hope. I mean, we hope for a better future, but we got to be brutally honest about what this administration has become. It's like, you know, I saw this game play out in the first term, and I remember I went to D.C. in 2018. I met with people from the admin, and me being like 20, I was like, is Q real? Is there a plan? Is there a five-dimensional chess? Is this all like going to end in building a wall and so on? And they looked at each other and they laughed in my face and they said, bro, I said, it is worse than you could possibly imagine.
Oh, I've been at the top of the Justice Department, and they literally they laughed at me and they said, no, we mean well, but you have no idea about it. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah. And anyone will tell you that. Anyone from Trump 1, any of the good guys from Trump 1, any of the people in Trump 2, they will tell you the exact same thing. It is brutal.
And that's right. And I will not come on air and lie to my audience about the situation, because I believe in them. If they know how desperate it is again, we will rise the occasion. I mean, I'm not going to sell hopium. It's just that clear.
And it's tough. I mean, it's tough because what other option do we have? That's really the question. People say, well, what else is there?
Well, that's it. I'm so sad to have to start turning loose of something that had so much potential.
Yeah.
It's like a grandma dying or something.
Well, it's sort of literally, I mean, he's kind of getting up there, you know? It's very tragic and sad. And sadly, there's no alternative. I think it would be a little bit easier on all of us if there was any underclassmen here.
Exactly. That's the worst there's part. No. I was about to say, there's no stable of new horses here.
Yeah, and I see that as a big failure of Trump, because it should have been a whole new stable. It should have been a new generation of MAGA congressmen and senators. You know, like, where's our AOC? Well, they all got cannibalized. Madison Cawthorn got destroyed by the Republicans. Matt Gaetz got destroyed by the Republicans. Marjorie Greene got. So you had a few of them. You had a few of them.
And not as many as there should have been. Gets vaporized by Susie Wiles.
Yep. Susie Wiles.
By the way, I confirmed 3 months ago with Flynn. He showed me the stuff. They're running opposition on hundreds of people. Flynn, myself, by the way, I told you this. They're running major opposition research on not the Democrats, but on us, because they know we're true. That's another level of this. How's that feel?
Yeah, and that people have no idea, but that has always been the struggle inside the GOP. That is always how it's been, which is that the establishment is always at war with its own base.
It's fratricide.
I don't even know that it's fratricide, because these people aren't even like us. You know,
we're the real deal, and they're. What does the doppelganger always do? The thing or the body snatcher? It kills the real thing.
Exactly. Well, it's the invasion of the body snatchers.
Yeah, so they're the body snatchers. You're right. It's not fratricide. The body snatchers want to get rid of the real one.
Yeah, it's that skin suit. They take the organic mass movement. They try to mimic it as best as possible, and then they eliminate the actual movement. That was the Tea Party. I just talked to Michelle Malkin this week, and she said, you know, we ran the same playbook 20 years ago. We ran the same playbook in 2006. when we would campaign against the rhinos in favor. Yeah, I know
The crew's telling me about clips. I was listening to you. They were like, Alex, you're supposed to reveal this big White House thing. We're still in the next segment. I was listening to you. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, this has been a multi-generational struggle. You go back to the John Birchers and National Review. You could go back to the paleocons and the neocons, Pat Buchanan, Sam Francis, Joseph Sobran versus the neocons, Tea Party, right up through to the Trump movement. And I always sort of knew right around 2018, 2019, that the biggest gap is that Trump is not an institutionalist or an institutionalizer. He is actually not going to create the so-called movement conservatism of the Trump generation. Who's going to fill in the gaps? It's all the same people. It's all the same money.
And what you just said is beyond key. His strength is he's not institutional, but when he leaves, that's our greatest weakness because there's nothing staying. There's nothing left there.
Exactly. And that's why it's now backsliding. You know, the personnel, there is no cadre of radical Trump supporters to fill up this White House. He still has to rely on the old guard.
Let's look at Iran in a good way, a bad way. They've got even more radicals below. So they knock out the elite. It doesn't matter. They just get stronger. With us, there's no second bench.
Well, yeah, there's no bench at all. Trump said it himself today. He said, I'm MAGA, not Tucker, not Megyn Kelly. He said, it's just me. And you go, really? It's just, so it's not Tucker. It's not Marjorie. It's not Thomas Massey. It's just you and your war with Iran and your Epstein
any
files.
Real thinker, I've told you probably earlier, Nick, I respect you. Disagree with something you say, but you're a leader. You care. I'm like, you're the future, Nick. We're counting on you. A real leader immediately recognizes younger bulls that are going to lead the people in the future. That's what a tribal leader does. With Trump, it's this ego thing where anybody else being strong is bad. And as he gets older, it's worse. It's sick.
You're right. That's like a boomer thing. That's the baby boomers, or he's 1946. This is like a baby boomer thing. They will not like let us have anything. They're hoarding the wealth. They're hoarding these like fiefdoms. You're right. It is an ego thing. And at the end of the day, that is really his issue. Nobody wants to admit it. It's actually brave of you to say that because that's a huge thing. A lot of people say, oh, it's his advisors. He's getting bad advice. It's his personnel. It's him.
No, I said back in March, it's him coming up, Epstein. All because he loves the power of protecting all these scumbags. He's not involved. He loves the power over him. He's not even in the blackmail. He's just in general, I'll take care of it. Bullshit, you will, man. And that's my concern is how do I not go totally psychotic and go all out anti-Trump because I still want to get Republicans elected because they're better. That's a real needle to thread here. That's what I'm trying to do, Nick.
It's tough. Like you said, I mean, because we're also trying to stay out of jail. You know, we're literally between a rock and a hard place. The Democrats want to kill us and flood the country with immigrants. The Republicans want to send us to die for Israel. So you go, okay, well, I mean, it's really hard to win here.
Oh, Todd Blanche, be clear. They're trying to figure out how to put several hundred of us, just to confirm insiders, they told Flynn, they're trying to put us in jail, bro. We don't have 3 years anymore. We have Todd Blanche trying to do it now.
Under what pretext? What's
they're
the
just they got their spot? They just like to open a national security investigation under Obama in 2013. They got the FBI. We know because the FBI doesn't like it. As bad as they are, they're like, what is this? It's like, really? They got jihadis, sleeper cells. They are literally over 200 people. They have FBI national security dragnets going on us right now. When I said opposition research, that's just the name of it. No. They have the Republican Party is now looking at all of us that have any soul, and they see us as the enemy.
We got to get out of Dodge, man. I don't know what country you're dropping in at, but that's the saddest part. You know, the whole country's coming down. The GOP's coming down. It's hard to kind of figure out what that next move is. That's why, for me, I keep my options open.
Used to head up the Army and then the Defense Intelligence. He got confirmed. He won't give me classified stuff, but they're like, sir, they got a whole opposition thing to take us down, and you're at the top. They say it's a bunch of names. And he's like, so, yeah, no, they're literally not worried about Democrats. They're not going to put them in jail. They're literally worried about loyal Americans. And to the Pentagon's credit, they're like, this is bullshit. Like, I've had all these Delta Force current guys, all of them call me, thank you, we're not going to go along with this. They're all freaking out, which is the good news. They have the Pentagon, bro, tasked to spy on us as the enemy when we're the real Americans. I mean, imagine the wake-up call in Tampa that they're like, we're not tasked for Muslims were tasked for Nick Fuentes and General Flynn and Alex Jones. Yeah, just give you that newsflash.
Yeah, well, that's the story of the admin, you know? Bill Clinton is being protected. Hillary, Obama, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's always this cope, like, well, you know, here's how Trump can still
win.
That's
what I'm saying. You're right, because we learned this the last 60 days. I told you this on the phone. I don't know if it got through because I talk fast. Dude, we're the focus because they know we're not sellouts. They're like, looking, we got it all. We got Trump under control. Who will block us? And they're literally getting rid of Ed Martin, creating files on us. And they're pissed because there's nothing there. What, like your most decadent actions while getting a pizza, right? That's your big party. Exactly, me too. And I don't mean that's a pedophile thing. I mean, like, you're getting a steak or whatever. They literally, though, are enraged because they can't find anything on us. They won't charge the Muslims. They won't charge the Somalis stealing billions. But literally, the eye of the White House is on us because they're worried we'll influence Trump.
That's how it's always been. You know, the GOP has always been cannibalizing the authentic base. That's just it. And that's why I've always said the GOP is really our biggest enemy. It's not even the Democrats, because at least the Democrats are the devil, you know, and you know that they're your enemy. But it's always these Republicans. They say, we're going to take the fight, hold the line, all this. And then they always turn the cannons inward and shoot at their own people. That has always been the story. So, you know, I tell my followers, take your own side. The GOP is not looking out for you. They're not fighting your enemies. They're not securing advantages for you.
Well, that's right. America first in our America survival. In fact, I'm going to start the America Survival Party. America first is great. America only. How about America survival? We need to understand it's up to us. Nobody's coming to save us.
And that's what people got to get through their heads is it's not going to be a top-down thing. It's going to be incumbent on all of us to get involved, getting involved in government, getting involved in the universities, in the private sector, because, obviously we tried it with Trump. People say you're not going to vote your way out of this. Surely we're not going to solve it just by electing the right president and expecting everything to flow from the top down. It doesn't work that way. So I agree with you completely. It's a shame because we had an opportunity here. Like you said, we really had a major opportunity. Trump won the popular vote, for crying out loud, on a platform of mass deportations and everything. And what it has secured is a corporate tax cut for the rich, a war for Israel, Epstein cover up. You go, okay, so what are we doing here? What does it profit us actually to even participate in the charade? So I'm interested in a revolutionary change or nothing at all. And I know a lot of people don't like that. A lot of people think that's extreme. And they remind me, if the Democrats get in, then this, that, and the other. I'm interested in either we get the change or we don't. But if the Republicans are marginally—
compromise has gotten us here.
Right, right.
And I respect your stuff. It's, you know, super accurate, so I respect accuracy. We should still try to think of leverage points. Because Trump did shut up when he kept saying vaccines are great with Bill O'Reilly and stuff until a few years ago, and he finally shut up and brought in Kennedy. They've done some good. He never admits guilt, but sometimes he'll back off. I think we shouldn't give up yet. How do we put pressure on Trump to pull out of this insanity? Because we got to try, even if it's impossible.
I mean, the most you could do is express your dissatisfaction. I don't know that there's going to be a million man march anytime soon. I think the war is actually, they say it's not that popular, but I think people are apathetic. So what do you do to pressure Trump? I mean, you can call your congressman and your congressman can take it up with Mike Johnson or something. But I think all we could do is really buckle up and we could wait for this to wash over us. I think at the minimum, you just make it clear we're not on board. I mean, burn your MAGA hats. I've tried it. You know, I went out to a little bit to Michigan in 2024 to try to get people not to vote and try to get some attention. We bombarded Truth Social. We bombarded Twitter. It didn't do any good. They're not listening.
Said then, I want to get good Republicans elected. I'm doing this to get their attention. And they spun it. You were actually trying to stop votes. I got some horrible news for radio listeners. TV viewers just saw it. Just like I said at the start of the show, Trump has now announced forever war. Now, we're not talking about a Hollywood movie with Tom Cruise. We're talking about, he just said, 1984 forever war. Reuters. They're printing the article now. What the hell is that, Nick Fuentes? I mean, this is just It's like Trump is an old barn burning down in lifetime.
Yeah, it's a sight to behold, especially for us. I think that a lot of people got red-pilled after the pandemic. Maybe they don't realize the gravity of this, but this is just like, what else is there even to say? I mean, at this point, this is the same guy that came down the escalator and said, the war in Iraq was a big mistake. We should have never been there. We knew they had no weapons of mass destruction. And now he says, we're fighting a forever war against Iran for regime change. You know, you just have to shake your head and you wonder how people are still on board. That's honestly the worst part is you go on Twitter and people are still making excuses. They say, oh, it's about China. Well, we'll wait until there's boots on the ground. You go, really? I mean, I don't know what people need to see for them to realize that we got tricked. We got betrayed. Now we need to try something else. But yeah, it's shocking to hear these things. He goes, I don't have the yips about boots on the ground. You don't have the yips. We're going to deploy to the Middle East again? Seriously? And then they say, we can go indefinitely. We're going to fight forever. Now, in fairness, I think that when he says that, that is rhetoric.
It's to sound strong, but the point is, it's antithetical to what he ran on.
Right.
I mean, because that's what the Pentagon wants, is a 20-year war like Afghanistan that's just a big moneymaker.
It is. It is antithetical. And here's the thing. Trump can gesture and bluff all he wants, but we are in the war and we're getting drawn in. So the problem with those kinds of things is, you know, the Pentagon is going to take that and run with it. You give them an inch, they're going to take a mile.
Well, yeah, let's be clear. Let's go to break and talk about this. It just blew me away. I mean, the Iranians lost 2 million people. That's World War I numbers in the proxy war with Iraq against Iran backed by us. These people do not fuck around. Yeah, a bunch of high school and college kids are out running around protesting. They're not going to kill people, folks. The Muslims are willing to do it. And they're not the retards like the other Muslims. We'll be right back. So there's a lot of different types of people in the world, but you can really break them into three or four groups. There's a lot of subgroups, but there's people that are just zombies, NPCs, and don't care. There's people that calculate whatever the current power structure is and go along with that. And then there's people that do what's right and don't think about the consequences because it's spiritual ingrained in them to do the right thing. And you got to have a fourth group that are good but are scared to tell the truth. And you can add a lot of other groups, subgroups to that. But people always ask who pays you, who does this. I sell you stuff straight up, supplements, books, you know, T-shirts, whatever. It's all great stuff. But I love the truth. I love humanity. I am a good person. My ancestors were good. I never really thought until I got older, but I'm like measuring up to them. I never really talked about my ancestors because it's like I'm going to live off them, but it's ridiculous. I'm all the way back to William the Conqueror and the old kings of England. And, you know, the inventor of the stock exchange and the Greshams, just on my mom's side. And then they all got kicked out. So they went to the New World, do their own deal, and the Mayflower, my dad's side, all of it. But I'm doing this myself. This is me. This is my time. Alex Jones did this with you. So I don't live in some class thing where it's off my name. This is a meritocracy. In the meritocracy, I've kicked some ass. And then I look at people in the political system, left, right, you name it, that just go with what will get them ahead, but they don't think about the second, third, fourth order of things. Well, I'll tell you the sixth or seventh order. And in historical mathematics and political equations, politics is math. You got it all together. Doing what's right and not thinking about all the different permutations is the most sophisticated thing and the most powerful always. So I can think through all these levels and get lost in it for hours and do incredible things consciously. But just being good and doing what's right, I always see God's plan in the end was the most advanced thinking. And Nick, I think it's important to state that because I can tell, and I know you're ready for your show, I've seen you ready for it here. You know, you're just reading, researching. Nobody's telling you what to say. There's no handler. When they've sued me, the Democrats and their big law firms, they're always like, who's the boss? Where's the money? Who tells you what to say? They cannot believe for years. till they depose the whole crew. Like, who tells them what to say? They don't even get, like, this is real, because for them, they're slaves. It's all handed down to them, every fucking word they say. So speak to authenticity. You say what you want about Nick Fuentes. You are your own man. You're not a Fed. You're not controlled. You're your own 26, 27, 28, whatever it is now, young man. And that very idea threatens them, that there's so much native talent that God gave us through our species.
Well, that's the thing. They're now trying to reverse engineer me. You know, in the past year, they saw my clips go viral. They saw the show blow up. And now they're all trying to reverse engineer. And they want to say, well, what is the secret ingredient? Why aren't people listening to this guy? And in many ways, I'm sure they did the same with
it's
you.
It's authenticity and native intelligence.
Well, they try to characterize it, and they say, well, it's because they're edgelording, or they're offering something sensational, or it's, you know, all different types of things. And they're always looking at it on the cosmetic level. But what they're missing is that we are real and people can tell. We are trying to do our best. We are trying to tell the truth. We are guided by our conscience, and people can pick up on that. You know, you're a live streamer in a sense. You're on radio. I'm more of like a, I guess we're both in live streaming.
No, I've been live streaming since it started, yeah.
But you can't hide. You can't hide on a live stream. When you do a show for 3 hours a day, every day for 20 years, you know, and I've done it for 10 years, there's nowhere to hide on that. Eventually,
yeah, people
can pick
how
up
do you
on,
have energy? Because they got to calculate everything in 2 minutes. No, the answer is I don't calculate how I look. I already know what's true. Exactly. There's no energy to bullshit when you're on the air 4 hours a day.
Exactly. There's no pretense. There's no facade. There's nothing like that. And that's what people like. People are sick of being lied to. You know, people are kind of dumb, but they can tell when they're being lied to sometimes. And I think that the basis of our appeal, or at least the reason why we have a fanatical following, people that follow us, really follow us, is because there is that connection. They're tapped into the same thing that we are.
I think you're right. Overall, you're right. But the big thing is you're right. You've been right like 99% of the time, Nick. That's why they do. I mean, sure, your jokes are funny. You know, you're a good-looking guy. You're witty. I edgelord too. It's fun. But it's unscripted. But at the end of the day, it's being right. You would not be successful if you were not correct. That's the final ingredient, is being right. That's what they don't like. The bad guys hate the fact that we're smart, we figured them out, and we're right, and they know it. And if people listen to us, they'll learn how we know. We tell them the secrets, how we know it, and we tell them it's game over. That's why I keep harping. Look how accurate I am. I said Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m., I bet there's a sleeper cell Muslim attack. And I bet it happens tonight, probably Austin, Texas, or Dallas, or Houston. It happened. It just, people ask, how did I know that? It's just, I can just see all the pieces.
You're right. It's the truth. It's fundamentally the truth. And that's our biggest secret weapon, I think, that we have.
So where does this go forward? I want to play a few clips of the Zionist Greater Israel. Anything you want to say, just say it now. Because I've been asked the question. You're very nice. I've told you, be aggressive like you are on your own show. You're very, very deferential on mine. Give us 10 minutes of just however long you want. Nick Fuentes Unleashed.
Nick Fuentes Unleashed. Well, to me, this entire debacle with Iran, it has to go somewhere. Like, I'm with you when you say, how do we pressure Trump to stop? How do we, although I am pessimistic that we can get Trump to change course, this does have to give way to something. It does have to generate action. And I continue to believe that the only action that is, you know, really going to work, that is possible, is that we have to switch up the voting. I really believe that. Like, my playbook right now, when I look at this Iran thing, all this does is make me more confident that I was right in 24.
Listen, I love Jeff McGinnis, but he said something yesterday very profound. He goes, Trump's got us by the balls. I'm his bitch, basically. Well, I don't want to be in that position.
Exactly. So you need options. You don't want to be somebody's bitch. You need options. You need to be able to walk away from the table. And what allows you to walk away from the table is if you have another option. You have somebody else to go to.
And the Republican Party is like a woman. And I don't want to be mean to women, but it's just funny. When you tell a woman, I'm done, you're not in charge, they kiss your ass. As soon as you kiss her ass, you're in the doghouse.
Yep. Yeah, that's a weird psychology. It's any negotiation. Any negotiation is like that. It's all a power dynamic. It's all about, you know, the coincidence of wants. And so they want our votes. We want them to work for us. If they don't work for us, we can't give them our votes. And if we're not going to give them our votes, well, we should just throw them
and
to the
other
side.
How obvious is it with Israel? I get Israel swinging its dick around to piss everybody off. But what about Israel bragging they run us here domestically? That's not good. I mean, what's the chutzpah point?
Yeah. So I think that Tucker might be onto something when he says that the reason they do this is because they want actually to bait and incite people to freak out. And then, and there's sort of like a subtle distinction here. Then certain groups can say, oh, there's all this anti-Semitism, and people usually stop there. But you got to consider the Jewry in Israel is distinct, although related to the Jewry in America. The Jews in Israel, I think their desire is to see the American Jews move there. I think their desire is to see American.
Yeah, they see themselves as the Ubermensch.
Yes. And so I think it is in their interest to generate Jewish nationalism. And Jewish nationalism is a response to anti-Semitism.
That's why Israel bombed Baghdad, bombed Madrid in the 50s to make Jews and blamed it on communists to make them move to Israel.
Exactly. Exactly. And similarly, in America, all the so-called anti-Semitism is pushing the American Jewish community into the arms of Israel, either moving there or supporting them or, you know, getting involved in activism. So I think to the extent that there's a play there, I think that's pretty clearly what it is. There's a symbiotic relationship.
Well, look at how Israel funds Al-Qaeda, funds Hamas, creates them, all that, the elements running it. And I'm not saying do this because I couldn't do it either, but and the Muslims, obviously, on average, are so emotional, so it's like it's impossible. But if they Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King or Jesus Christ, Jesus knew what to do. Imagine if no one fought Israel and everybody just stopped. Well, then Israel would just stage stuff and say they did it. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They would just blow stuff up and say they did it. I mean, it's just. But what if you could get everybody to stop fighting Israel? That would be the key to shutting it down.
See, I don't know if that's the case. If it's just a matter of getting them to stop fighting, I think that
no. But you hear what I'm saying? They have to. They fund the radical Muslims to get attacked,
right?
And stood down on October 7th. Obviously, it's academic. What I'm saying, it's not going to happen,
right? Yeah, I think the solution is that we need a movement that is actually restraining Israel. Like it needs to go further in the sense that
that shows you what they're scared of. They got 20 states or 23 to pass laws that if your city condemns Israel and genocide, they don't get state funds. That's unconstitutional. Exactly. They're really worried about boycotts.
Well, and in particular in the national security apparatus, they don't want anybody in the National Security Council or the Pentagon that is going to tell the president, you need to restrain Israel, because they're driving the conflict. I said it on my show the other night. If it was up to Washington and Tehran, they would have made a deal because it's in both of their interests and there is enough overlap there. It is Israel that doesn't want the peace. So what's the answer? The United States needs to use its leverage over Israel and say, look, we pay for your military. We protect you from sanctions and from the UN and the rest of it. You have to do what we say. You have to listen to us. You're not going to go into Iran alone. You're not going to sabotage our diplomacy. You're not going to go out there with these provocative statements and threaten Iran while we're trying to make a deal. And if you wanted to actually have peace, if Tehran and Washington were to make a deal, that is the necessary step. As a matter of fact, that's the only step.
Because I said before he came on, I was going to say this and I didn't. Maybe I'll shoot a special report today because I have a lot of sources. I don't want to give them up. But a lot of it came out in the newsletter, so I can say it now. Trump's doing face saving right now, saying, no, I made Israel attack first. Well, the Pentagon's like, no, we didn't want to attack during the day. And Rubio's like, yeah, they did it. Sorry. They're all freaked out about this. I know the chairman told him privately, he came on the news, this is a bad idea, don't do it. We'll follow your order, though, sir. But here's, you know, 70% bad options. You know, we say don't do it. Then I confirm with others that Israel, basically Trump was like leaning on not doing the attack, so they did this. Now Trump is face saving because he wants to obviously do that. And that Trump got really pissed off. There's photos of him screaming at Hegseth, who I think overall is a good guy. But the bottom line is that I've confirmed that Israel is basically in control of our foreign policy by our own posture to be allied with them. And that is uncontrovertible. Because now they're trying to do damage control. Oh, no, Trump gave the order. No, our very doctrine is if Israel is attacked, we attack. And so thank God Russia's not following its agreement with Iran or China, or we'd be in war with them right now. So it is a fact. And then the neocons, the Israel lobbies all over the internet attacking anybody that points this out and tries to say it's not the case, while Netanyahu brags about it. So, I mean, that's the big news. I'm not even defending Trump. It actually makes him worse. That it is now literally true what I claimed, well, I wanted to claim wasn't true because I don't want to believe it. That Trump is an errand boy of Israel, And how do we deal with that, Nick Fuentes?
Well, if Trump is an errand boy for Israel, then you got to shut down his government. And that means you got to go into the midterms and you got to get the Democrats in. And the Democrats hopefully will impede the administration. That's what they're going to do. They're going to launch investigations, subpoenas, select committee, all that kind of stuff. And they're going to grind it to a halt. And, you know, if Trump is an operative of a foreign government, consider that he's forfeited his entire mandate, because his whole basis of support is that he's America first, MAGA. He's not like the other politicians. Okay, well, if you're an errand boy for Israel, if you're a puppet of the Jewish state and you're bringing us to war for them, that's not like a small thing. That's not like a little bit of foreign aid. We're going to war on their behalf. He has to be opposed. And a lot of people don't want to take it there for one reason or another. But, I don't know what the option is. I don't know how you work with that. If you're America first and Trump is Israel first, well, that's not exactly a divide that can be bridged. There's not actually a middle ground between like
prioritizing Israel. Let me give you the good news. From my sources, there are many Pentagon, White House, you name it. This is a firestorm. Trump is really pissed off. He doesn't even know what he thinks. That's why all these messages. Notice the last few hours, the messages are all schizophrenic. And have you noticed that?
Yeah, all over the media.
So that's good news, at least. I think we've got a... I'm telling you, Trump will end up probably seeing this, because they respect you. I've met with them and stuff. I've told you off record. Like, they've seen the algorithms. They're paying attention to you, son. And I mean that in a nice way. What would you advise the president to do right now?
Well, it's tricky because we're in. So, you know, you would have said never go in, but we're in now. Now that we're in, I think you got to hit Iran really hard and then try your best to leave. But, you know, again, it's like I said before, Israel's going to want us to push deeper and deeper into this until we have a full-scale regime change.
And then if we win, put assholes in to do it again.
Right. So you got to back off. You got to let the Iranian regime reconstitute itself and restore order. Because if the Iranian security architecture is not going to rule the country, then who is? There's nobody else. So it's like
that's what Eric Prince said 2 weeks ago. Same thing.
Everyone has. I mean, it's just obvious. This country has 90 million people in it. Their economy's already collapsing. If you don't have the IRGC running the country, it's just going to be a failed state. Unless you have an alternative, which they don't. So that's who's going to prevail. And so you need to just...
So it's a war crime to go wreck this state if you don't have an alternative.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. This is shaping up to look like Syria or like Libya. One of these places where it's like the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Because who's then going to provide all the services and the goods, and who's going to provide for the logistics and infrastructure, security?
Well, I've seen Israelis on a bunch of interviews say, we don't care about the Iranians. Screw them. Wreck it. We can't be part of something like that.
Well, and this is the Jewish holiday of Purim. I believe it was yesterday, Purim, which commemorates the victory of the Jews over the Iranians. And they celebrate their victory by killing 75,000 Iranians just on account of, they already won. They already got their guy and they just killed a bunch of them anyway. So they view them as the Amalekites, and the Amalekites kill the women, kill the children, kill everybody. That's who we're dealing with here. And people say it's the Khazar mafia. People say it's the Masons. This is out of the Old Testament. This is out of the Talmud. It's Jews. It's Israel. And that's what they have in store for the Iranians. They love, just like in Gaza, they love to see it. So,
all right, I had like 50 clips and I should have played this with you. But Nick, things are quick and you got to come back sooner. I'll come on your show if you want. You got to come down to Austin. You're dead on. You've been totally vindicated. My respect level went up even higher. Here is the former Israeli prime minister, total Rothschild operative, Naftali Bennett, just days ago saying, when we're done with Iran, Turkey, who has the biggest army in Europe, this just shows the Israel project. Like I said, I told people Saturday, I said, it's the next country, the next, and we're supposed to now go to war with Turkey. I mean, this is bullshit. Play that, and then go to the clip of, I want to get your take. I hear you talked about it on your show. I saw you, but Huckabee going, yeah, Israel could take it all. I mean, and half the countries are allies of Israel. This is like, yeah, I love my neighbor. He's my friend. I'm going to eat him next week. Here's the clips.
A new Turkish threat is emerging. I want to be very clear. Turkey and Qatar have gained influence in Syria, are seeking influence elsewhere and everywhere throughout the region. And from here, I warn, Turkey is the new Iran. Erdogan is sophisticated, dangerous, and he seeks to encircle Israel. And while some senior Israelis were on Qatar's payroll, Qatar and Turkey are nourishing
Turkey to overthrow the Islamic
Brotherhood monster that is growing and eventually might become as dangerous as the one created by Iran. Turkey and Qatar are gaining influence not only in Syria, but also in Gaza, through the front door.
If Israel just stopped now.
And everyone, and trying to create a
They can be successful. They're not going
to
stop.
Turkey is trying to flip Saudi Arabia against us and establish a hostile Sunni axis with nuclear Pakistan.
You've appealed to Genesis. Genesis 15 says it's Abram. It's pre-Abraham. It's Abram. Receives from God the news that his descendants will inherit the land. And you tell me as the theologian if I'm getting this wrong, but from the Euphrates to the Nile. I think that's right. And that would include like basically the entire Middle East. That would be the Levant. So that would be Israel, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon. It would also be big parts of Saudi Arabia and Iraq. It would be, I mean,
I'm not sure it would go that far. I mean, it would be a big piece of land, but here's the point.
It would be a lot of places that are now countries.
I love how you roped him in. We'll just take most of it.
This particular area that we're talking about now.
Fuck this.
Israel is a land that God gave through Abraham to a people that he chose. It was a people, a place, and a purpose. We can look at it that way. Christian Zionism, I want to go back because that's where we started.
I'm not going to let you off on this because you have said it three times that God gave this land to this people. And so it is entirely fair for me with respect to ask, what land are you talking about? Because I just read Genesis 15, as I have many times. Mm-hmm. And that land, I think it says, from the Nile to the Euphrates, which is, once again, basically the entire Middle East. So God gave that land to his people, the Jews, or he didn't. You're saying he did. What does that mean? Does Israel have the right to that land? Because you're appealing to Genesis.
Yeah.
You're saying that's the original deed.
It would be fine if they took it all.
Play that again. Back it up 10 seconds. So they were, here's the deal. I can do the math. I can talk for 10 hours on this. They attacked Saudi Arabia, Jordan, all these places. I mean, we already had Obama put radicals in to take over Egypt. I mean, this is cuckoo town. Play it again. He's like, yeah, they can take it all. They will take it all. This is, and we're supposed to be the muscle for this, folks. Here it is.
Because you're appealing to Genesis.
Yeah.
You're saying that's the original deed.
It would be fine if they took it all.
But you want us to do it. Nick Fuentes.
That's exactly right. And it doesn't stop in. Everybody thought it would stop in Iran. And now they say, well, we're going to take out Erdogan and so on. And it just goes to show that's their end game, is they want to control the entire region. They want no rivals. And that's why they took out Iraq, Syria, Iran. And now what's actually funny, in their quest to destroy Iran, they've actually rallied everybody against them. So Saudi Arabia was getting ready to join the Abraham Accords in 2023 when October 7th happened. And then that derailed the process. Now the Saudis are working with Pakistan on a mutual defense pact. They're bringing Turkey into it. There is actually an emerging axis that is literally being built.
Israel blames Iran when Saudi Arabia is clear. It's what Israel did.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, of course. It's always Iran. It's always, you know, then it'll be Erdogan in Syria. And it's funny because they took out Syria. Now they're worried that Erdogan is going to fill the power vacuum that they created. So
and they worked
they
with
the
him
there.
To take down Assad.
Right, right. Exactly. So
we got 45 seconds left. Are you gonna do a show tonight?
I'll be doing a show tonight. Yes.
When do I get to go on your show? I want to come on.
Soon. See, we don't have. I don't have a big studio like yours. I have a small studio.
You never,
I don't have enough room.
You got to start doing them.
Yeah, I know. I just like to hear myself talk more. I guess.
No, I get it. It's easy. Hey, listen. You're dead on. I want to try to figure this out, Nick Fuentes. On Rumble, Nick J. Fuentes, thank you so much. I hope you're wrong that Trump's unsalvageable, but we're about to find out. Thank you so much for being with us. Powerful hour and 45 minutes.
Thank you for having me.